conditional use number 2113. Ms. Cornwell?
Thank you. This is an ordinance to grant a conditional use of land in an AR1 agricultural residential district for an electrical generation and nutrient recovery facility to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Dagsboro 100, Sussex County, containing 16.71 acres, more or less, located on the southwest corner of DuPont Boulevard, Route 113 and Brazier Road. The tax parcel is District 133, Map 6, Parcel 123. Staff would note it's a portion of that property. Of that parcel, the 911 address is not available. The Planning and Zoning Commission held a public hearing on January 25th of this year. At that meeting, submitted into the record were a staff analysis and exhibit booklet, results from the DLDOT service level evaluation, comments from the Sussex Conservation District, comments from the Sussex County Engineering Department. We also read several letters into the record. Staff would note that the Planning Commission did take testimony. There was additional information submitted by people in opposition, including an a petition. At that meeting, the Planning Commission recommended deferral for further consideration. At the meeting on February 8th of this year, the Planning Commission did recommend approval of the application for reasons 1 through 11, with the conditions 12A through O. Since that time, the Planning Office has received several additional letters. We received at least four letters in opposition. I would note that three of those emails are from the same person. We also received several other letters from Lori and Burke Parker that they have some concerns about being able to raise their family in the area. While they do say they're not against the Clean Bay Renewable, they just have concerns about the location of the property and the use. They have concerns about noise, water quality, and air quality, traffic on the roads, and concerns about the property value. And we would also note that we actually have two letters in support of the application. So the four letters that I did reference were in opposition. The letters in support, one is from the Department of Agricultural. The Department of Agriculture, and they are supporting this application. And then we also have a letter from the Delmarva Poultry Industry Incorporated, also in support of this application. Thank you.
Any questions from council? If not, Mr. Schrader.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. For the benefit of the record, my name is Dennis Schrader. I am the attorney for Clean Bay Renewables, LLC, which is the applicant in conditional use number 2113. I have with me Andy Hallmark and Dr. Shaw, who are representatives of the applicant, who will address you in a few minutes when we get into the detail. I would like to inform you that J. Wayne Howard and Lenora Howard are the owners of this particular site. It is located on the west side of US 113, just south of Georgetown, and it is adjacent to a borrow pit and some activities of the Joseph Companies and another company. The site contains 16.71 acres, is located on US 113. It is agricultural in its present use, and we would propose for this use energy recovery and recycling plant. And I would like to note at this point in time that there is some popular conversation in some of the social media that this is an incinerator. It is not an incinerator. It is intended to be a electrical generation and nutrient recovery facility. Under the current classifications of your zoning code, this is subject to a conditional use, which allows you to impose some conditions on it. If you were to favor us with approval, the Planning Commission, as you know, has not been shy about this and has imposed conditions A through O, which is significantly long and technical for the Planning Commission under these circumstances. This property is designated under the comprehensive plan as a low density area and a level 4 in the state's strategies map for spending. We have provided you with a number of documents contained within an exhibit book, and we will have some of these for you to look at in a moment by way of PowerPoint, but they include the application, an aerial photo of the site, a tax map, a copy of the deed to the property, a number of existing future land and spinning maps. We have a letter from the Delaware Electric Cooperative. We have a level of service level evaluation report from DelDOT. There is a project narrative and process diagram that Dr. Shaw will get into in a few minutes. With those thoughts in mind, if you'll permit me, I will be calling Dr. Shaw to the podium. Dr. Shaw? Oops, excuse me. I want to start with Andy Hallmark. I'm going to give you a fresh face. Let me have Hallmark.
Are you a doctor?
I am not.
All right, good.
A lawyer? Are you a lawyer?
I am not a lawyer.
Good, go ahead.
Yeah, so you can trust everything I say. Yeah, that's right.
State your name for the record, sir.
My name is Andy Hallmark, and I'm the Outreach Director for Clean Bay Renewables.
And what does that mean? What is an Outreach Director?
That means that I work with different communities that we come into to help them understand what we are doing and attempting to do, and work with various elected officials as well.
And you're authorized by Clean Bay Renewables to speak on its behalf in this application?
I am.
If you would, please, one of the issues that's likely to come up today is the site selection process.
Sure.
Can you describe how the site selection process works and how the site may have been chosen?
So as the council, I'm sure, is very aware, last year we originally proposed this facility along Route 9. And during that time, we took that to planning and zoning, and there were concerns related to traffic, congestion. There's a senior center nearby. There's a school. That's where the sports of the beach fields are. Several concerns came up at the time. And during that time, the Planning and Zoning Commission rejected the application. Rather than trying to take that on to the county council, we understood that it was important to take that input in and go back to the drawing board a little bit. So we did. And in August of last year, we actually reapplied for the current site that you're looking at right now along Highway 113. As you mentioned, Mr. Schrader, it is about a little over 16 acres along there, and it's near the Melvin Joseph Borrow Pit, a construction area, an abandoned airport, and across the road is a propane storage facility, and there's also a small neighborhood to the north nearby.
Proximity to electrical services, how does that play into this?
Well, as we just noted, just across the road, of course, whenever you're building an electrical generation station, you need to be near a place where you can interconnect as well.
And this site meets that criteria?
Correct.
Okay. And whose area is it?
In this case, this is Delaware Electric Co-op.
And is there a power purchase agreement with Delaware Electric Cooperative?
Yes, there is a power purchase agreement. And actually, that agreement for the 5 megawatts of power that we're discussing currently would serve about 3,500 homes, 10,000 people, if you kind of round up to who would live in those homes. And if you think about that in the context of where we are today, that would be larger than the population of Georgetown that could be provided power.
Take a look at the picture on the right that's currently up on the screen. This accurately portrays those properties that are residential within the area?
That's correct.
And it also portrays where the blue is to the left, the Borrow Pits?
Correct.
Okay. And let me ask you one other question. Are you familiar with the operation to the extent that you would know the numbers of employees that would be employed on this particular site?
Once constructed, we would assume about 15 to 17 full-time positions. The facility itself would work 24 hours, 7 days a week, but would only accept feedstock. In this case, anaerobic digestion feedstock would be chicken litter. 6 days a week from 7 to 7 is the conditional uses by the Planning and Zoning Commission. And of course, we're happy to do that just because it makes sense from a timing perspective.
As far as this particular site is concerned, will there be a requirement for on-site septic and water for this project?
Well, that's something we're exploring right now. Of course, the septic, we believe it would be there if there's water necessary. Whether or not we're able to come on city water or not, it would be necessary, but only for the use of employees on-site.
This site is or may be in a certificated area by artesian water, correct?
That's what we were discussing a little earlier today, actually.
I have no further questions of Mr. Hallmark, and if you'll permit me, I'll move to Dr. Shaw next.
Okay.
Dr. Shaw? Because this is a separate hearing from the one we had earlier, I'm going to have to ask you to identify yourself, state your employment, and give me your title.
I'm Dr. Christy Shaw. I still work for Pinnacle Engineering. We are working as partners with Clean Bay Renewables. Still have the same education. This time around, I will add that pertinent to this application, I'm also a State of Maryland Certified Nutrient Management Consultant.
And you are a PhD in health sciences?
I'm a PhD in environmental sciences.
In environmental sciences.
I've got a master's in health sciences.
Gotcha. Okay. And what is your relationship to this particular project?
I am the environmental scientist on this project.
And have you participated in its design?
Yes, I have. Previous to this position, I worked for Rao Engineering, which is part of the design engineering firm that's still actively involved in the design of this project. I worked there as a senior scientist involved in the environmental and permitting and regulatory processes associated with this project.
In the exhibit book that we presented to the council, there is a narrative and of the recycling process. Would you be kind enough to go through that for me, please? And Janelle,
sure.
If you could give us the site. You know.
All right, so I'm going to walk you through from the beginning of the process to the end. So from this point where you would have a truck that was coming onto the property, this here is our litter delivery area. We have walking bed trucks that would do the delivery. They're the same walking bed trucks that are used for other litter delivery, farm to farm. They would back up here. The conveyor is hooked up to another conveyor, a hopper, that would deliver the litter to 100,000. We have four 100,000 gallon mixed tanks. So we have 12 of these trucks that come each day, 6 days a week. Again, the self-imposed hours of 7 to 7. And from that place, the litter that is brought in, which is 250 tons per day, each truck carries roughly 23 to 24 tons, is put into these mixed tanks. At the point where the truck is offloaded, the mixed tank's hatch closes, and that's the last time that it's exposed to air while it's in the process. From that point, once the litter is brought, litter is approximately 27% moisture, so it's very dry when you bring it in. So we're bringing it up to substantial moisture content, somewhere around 90-95%. And then it's moved into these tanks here, these four tanks. There are four of them, and they're all 1.5 million gallons each. These are our primary thermophilic anaerobic digesters. As the poultry litter is moved into these, it's heated to 135 degrees. It's there for approximately 1 week, and that's where the fermentation process begins. And then from there, it's moved via this pipe over here to these 3 million gallon tanks. This is the secondary thermophilic. This is a mesophilic, so it's not as warm as the first four. Secondary digesting. So you ferment out here for approximately 3 weeks. This is about a month-long process out in the tanks. And then from there, it's piped over to here, where this is your gas cleanup. We have our generators next to the gas cleanup, a substation next to the generators, and we have a barn light structure that has our nutrient recovery facility inside of it. So once we get to the point where the digestate has moved here to the position where it's either we're going to pull the methane gas off of the top of the digesters, or we're going to move the digestate itself into our nutrient recovery facility. In the nutrient recovery facility is where we take the phosphorus off of out of the digestate. So we use a company called Astera that has used their technology has been used primarily in wastewater treatment plants. It pulls the struvite, the phosphorus, out of the water in wastewater treatment plants, so it doesn't clog the pipes it basically clogs the pipes like cholesterol. So they pull the phosphorus out. They make these little pearls. I think I have. Yes, they're still in the box. So we're gonna send this around so you can see what the struvite pearls look like. So we're using that same technology to pull the phosphorus out of the chicken litter. And after we pull it out, we have very little phosphorus, if any, left in our digestate product. From that point, the digestate product becomes a soil amendment. So the soil amendment, which we're going to also pass around, is organic rich. It has no phosphorus. It still has nitrogen, potassium, all the micronutrients that you find in typical chicken litter. So it's still a very profitable and useful product for farmers. But instead of having the phosphorus in it that some farmers don't need these days, you could blend back in phosphorus if you needed it, but otherwise you would have a product that farmers that have phosphorus-saturated soils could use with all of the same chemical components of... So I would suggest opening and smelling, because there's no smell.
Go ahead, George.
You're using them.
In particular, Mr. Cole.
Did that as well.
So you have dirt now. It's dirt.
My father started on a chicken farm, and unfortunately the chicken houses burned down, and we moved to the beach.
So we have multiple revenues of income.
Probably rolled into something.
That come off of bringing in the chicken litter. So I should... preface this by saying we do pay for chicken litter. We pay market value for chicken litter. This is, I think, a lot of...
they don't give it to you for nothing?
No. Chicken litter is an incredibly valuable resource. And one of the things I'm excited about our product is you still have the resource at the end of our process. It's just that it's phosphorus deplete. And we've been able to pull out a lot of energy from it. So instead of just putting it on the ground... where it's going to off-gas, and it still is great for feeding the plants, but there is a lot of extra that you can get out of the chicken litter before it's put out on the ground.
Before you get too far, I might forget.
Okay.
What are you going to do with that phosphorus when you take it out of there?
So the phosphorus is sold. So Ostera, who's the technology provider, we have an offtake agreement with them, and they actually have markets in the Midwest. So it'll go back to the Midwest where you have phosphorus deplete soil.
We're going to load a train now, send out there, right?
I'm not sure how it goes out. There's conversations about whether you do it by train or truck, or that's their
I don't think
that's their market.
Well, I don't think they even want to buy it because they tried this process over at between Schaefer and Laurel. Purdue tried this. And they didn't want the manure after Ohio, after got it all sorted.
So I think it's worthwhile. This is a good point to point out just how different our process is from AgriCycle. So AgriCycle was the pelletization of chicken manure. There wasn't a pasteurization. So basically, once our chicken litter moves through, it's fermented and it's pasteurized. So it's pathogen free at the end as well. In a lot of ways, our
Purdue's wasn't.
I don't believe
so. Is that what you're
so.
Implying?
I don't want to say.
But yours is. You were saying why yours is different.
Ours is different because we have.
They're going to sell electric off it.
We've taken all the phosphorus out of this one big
thing.
Taken
phosphorus out.
Yes.
Okay.
And we've changed the dynamics of the nutrients in it as well. So we actually have a bound form of nitrogen in our soil amendment that won't off-gas and volatilize like regular chicken litter. So as we progress through this technology, we're finding more and more surprises that are on the positive for farmers.
So, Mr. President,
I'm
sometimes a slow learner, a visual guy. I'm a guy. So. So no comments from you there, Mr. Cole. So you obviously take – first question is there a difference between chicken manure and chicken litter?
No.
Okay. Just want to make sure we clarify because there's different terms.
Unless you got the droppings in it, that makes a difference.
I manure. Two different terms. I want to make sure that it is indeed the same thing. Okay. So chicken litter is the end result product after the chickens do their thing and they eat and they have remains that are left. So the question, so this process, you, as you mentioned, takes a full month.
Yes.
how many chickens or chicken farms, if you would take your pick, your clients that you're buying this product, how many does that represent?
So
that's question number one.
Each truck represents approximately one full clean out of a chicken house. So that 23 tons, 24 tons is equivalent to one chicken house.
And they get cleaned out how often?
They get cleaned out. That's actually a really great question. So windrowing has occurred in the last few years, and they're not being cleaned out as fully and as often. This technology will start to move that in the opposite direction, where I believe they're going to be cleaned out more often.
Let me ask a question that maybe will help Mr. Arlett. How many tons of litter will pass through this particular plant in a day, a month, or a year?
So 250 tons per day.
250 tons?
Tons.
Okay. And how many truckload is how many tons?
That's 12 trucks a day.
So 12 chicken houses.
That represents
12 chicken houses.
Yeah. See, I'm trying to visualize. You got it, Michael. So 12 chicken houses a day is what's being brought in here.
Right.
Okay.
Now, is that roughly 40,000 chickens per? Is that the size that you're using? 30, 40,000 chickens per house?
You got her on that one.
I don't know.
Maybe a doctor, but she doesn't know that.
I'm not sure that's a fair question to Dr. Shaw, because she wouldn't be the producer.
Okay. I wish I knew.
She's going to study up, though.
I'm going to get back to you on it.
Okay. There you go. So, all right, so the product comes in and goes into the smallest tanks there, and then as you mentioned before, it's fermented. So what product is added to the chicken manure, chicken litter, to allow it to be fermented?
So anaerobic digestion is done with bacteria. So these are anaerobic bacteria, which simply means that they're bacteria that operate in the absence of oxygen.
Little critters.
They're little critters. So that's another point I should make. Again, this is an entirely enclosed facility. We don't want air in our facility, because if we have air leakage into the facility, our bacteria don't do the job that they're meant to do. So from the start, as you move through, entirely enclosed. So the anaerobic bacteria ferment the chicken litter. They use all of the carbon sources and other nutrient sources in the chicken litter to metabolize, and methane gas is what they produce as the metabolite. So there have been concerns about explosions. How safe is it to have methane present and in this volume? So I want you to think about the tanks as being... Think about if you made a smoothie in the morning with a lot of greens in it, maybe some protein powder and some water, and then you just sat it on the counter for the day. When you come home at the end of the day, you're going to have this thick sludge at the bottom, and it's going to have separated out, and by the time you get to the top, it's just kind of a goop. But you've got more liquid at the top, and you've got a thick sludge at the bottom. That is what these tanks are like. You have the digestate at the bottom of the tanks, and then you start to move up through the column where you have more liquids, and then you have the gas that sits at the very top. The gas that sits at the very top is not pure methane. It is a very wet methane, so you're in a 100% humidity at all times. So that 100% humidity keeps the methane from being combustible. It has to go all the way to the very end of the process. It goes to this little house here where you have gas cleanup. So the gas cleanup pulls it through, scrubs it, removes your sulfur dioxide. It then moves into your engines. And so we'll have 6 megawatts worth of power that we are planning to produce here right now. We have a 5 megawatt power offtake with DEC. We'll use 1 megawatt of that power to run the facility itself. And so basically it comes through, it's cleaned, it goes right into the generator. The generator converts it to electricity, and that's the time frame when you have pure methane. So it's an on-demand system. You don't have methane storage. So the concerns about it being explosive, the concerns about any sort of flammability, it's a wet methane.
So there's no safety concern that you have?
No. And so I want to talk a little bit about the generators. So the generators that we're looking to use are produced by GE. We've actually gone and visited generators that are very much like it. They have two of them that sit outside of Peninsula General in Salisbury. They sit right outside of patient rooms. They're using natural gas. So these generators are rated at 33 feet. Actually, not sure if I can go forward or not. Yes, I can. All right, so this picture here shows the generator pad. Each of the generators is compartmentalized, and they basically ship them in a shipping crate that is made just for that generator. It has soundproofing inside of it. It has all of the engine's components, the gas cleanup, anything that that engine needs, any of the emission scrubbers that it needs are within that compartmentalized unit. So here we're showing four generators, which is just a, we probably were thinking more, but we're scaling back a tiny bit. So here I want to show you, this is a 33-foot radius around the generators, and that is the radius at the point where the generators sound like, it's 70 decibels, which is equivalent to an air conditioner unit. So if you're standing 33 feet from one of these containers, it sounds like an air conditioning unit.
How many air conditioning units?
Three. So I have three air conditioning units outside of my bedroom, and I don't hear them.
Because you're a doctor. That's why.
Or maybe I'm deaf. I don't know. So I just want to point that the closest home is 419 feet away. So the drop-off from the engines to the nearest home, I'm guessing that road noise is probably more of an issue than anything that we're going to produce with the engines.
And between those generators and the closest home of Mr. Saul, I think it is, there will be at least the large structure that looks like a barn, correct?
Yes.
And also, does this site plan call for, I'll wait for you to get back, landscaping and berming, correct?
Yes. So when we were...
And if you just take a second to show where the generators are, Mr. Saul's
right here.
House on this particular aerial view.
That's right up here.
Okay. I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, get me back on track.
No, but there is landscaping
yes,
around this
yes.
property.
So we have landscaping around the property under the conditions that were set forth by the planning and zoning. There was also a suggested plan for buffer. And so that is certainly within our plans. And again, I should say, I mentioned it on the previous conditional use, but we do have some wetlands here at the southern end of the property. We have avoided any of our site design anywhere near the wetlands. We leave those wetlands and their buffers intact, and any of our stormwater management will be directed into those excess areas.
All of this is a self-contained facility, correct?
Yes, it's entirely self-contained, so I guess I should... This gives you a little bit more idea of the artist rendition.
Why are we saying, isn't that farmhouse about to fall down?
Well,
is that a
know,
good
Ms.
farmhouse? Is that
in, trying to think of Mr. Cole, that house is standing, and it is referred to in the PLUS report.
It's historical? But isn't it pretty rough shape, if I'm not mistaken?
In my opinion, yes. But
well, you live at the beach. Everything.
So do you, sir. Obviously, it's there, and if you go back to the preceding
why are we going around it? Because the PLUS, somebody to state wanted.
It may very well be historical, and if so, it's been preserved. It's set out from the actual site itself. If you can go
okay.
back to it.
Yeah.
If it was so valuable, I'm wondering why it's. I think, it, if I'm not mistaken, it's pretty rough shape.
If we wait another year or two, it'd fall down.
It might.
You know, Mr. Cole would be a good place to raise bees.
There you go. So to continue the conversation, so
yeah.
Again, so we it's month process, and we end up, these are the two products that remain after the process is complete.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Yes.
And then what do you do with these?
That goes to the Midwest
yep.
or to other phosphorus depleted areas. That gets sold back to farmers in the area, mm-hmm. and we are committed to providing that at the same cost as manure.
Okay. So it is truly recyclable operation, if you would.
Yes.
From truly beginning to end.
Yes.
Okay. So we're about to hear some comments from those who oppose. So you've made mention that there's no safety concerns from your perspective.
Right.
No noise perspective, other than it sounds like it's three air conditioning units.
Yes.
What are the things that we're going to hear that you want to address? Because when they come out here, you won't be able to address it.
If you'll permit me, Mr. Arlett, I have a number of questions yet that I'd like to to ask Dr. Shaw. First things first, and I just want to go back and reiterate again, this is not an incinerator, is that correct?
It is not an incinerator.
What's the difference between this and an incinerator?
An incinerator would burn the chicken manure to make electricity, and that would be the end of the process.
And in this case, we are doing something different.
We are digesting it with bacteria to produce methane, which is not something that you would produce with incineration. And at that point, you would have no nutrient recovery, and you would have no soil amendment at the end of the process. Quite frankly, it wouldn't be economically viable.
If you would, please, could you describe for the benefit of the council the emptying and unloading areas and the vehicles that will be used to bring product into the site?
So this is a picture of one of the conveyor bed tractor trailers that we would use. This is the conveyor bed tractor trailer that all chicken integrators and manure delivery folks use, moving the chicken litter between farms. It's completely covered, so it does have a tarp that rolls back and forth over the top of the truck. My understanding is that that is a requirement by DelDOT. You have to have it covered whenever it's on the road. And we, of course, will adhere to that. So we are working with chicken litter brokers and integrators on our chicken litter supply. And so they actually have complete control over their drivers and those trucks. So, you know, if they want to stay on the road, they're going to follow those rules. So the conveyor bed truck, again, we'll hook up to a hopper that will go into the mix tanks and to alleviate any excess litter falling off. And we will also, these will all be on concrete pads. We're not going to just have them on dirt.
Now we're talking about truck loads here. How many truckloads are going to haul in? About 7?
12.
12 loads a day?
Per day.
12 per day,
so
6 days a week.
How many are going to be hauling out? How many will be going out?
Well, all 12 will leave.
At least 12 going back since we got wet. It's going to take as much manure, right?
It'll take about 6 loads of soil amendment off each day, between 4 and 6. So we actually are able to recover approximately 50% of the tonnage that comes in will go off as soil amendment. We're in talks right now with soil fertilizer blenders about doing the full offtake of our soil amendment so that, again, there are other people in the business who do things better than we do. We're not in the market of selling fertilizer or soil amendment. Other people can do that. But we do have a commitment to making sure that price point stays at a price point that is something that area farmers will not see us as competition, but instead see it as...
Now, you said a price point. How much is that price point?
So chicken litter is anywhere between $18 and $24 a ton.
If you buy it raw, how much are you going to have to pay for that going through the cycle?
$18 to $24 a ton.
So why are we going to do that? We've lost a lot of our energy going through your cycle.
So you have all the nutrients still. All the nutrients except for the phosphorus are still present in that chicken litter or in the soil amendment product. So that you haven't lost anything from beginning to the end when it comes to the actual nutrients. And the nutrients are what you realize as a farmer is what you want.
So In a lot of ways, we've lost a lot of our energy because the water's going to be added to it. It's going to make it wetter.
Actually, we concentrate the nutrients.
You do?
So you're actually going to need less of it than what you started with.
It's hard to make chicken pudding out of chicken manure. And I think that's why.
Chicken pudding.
I think that's what I'm driving at here. I don't know how we're going to end up with something more than what went in there. I know I would. Have you got a sale for all this chicken manure you're going to put in this thing, in this plant? You got a sale for all that?
Do we have a sale for it?
Yes.
We do. We have chicken litter, we have contracts with chicken brokers, and with we're in discussions right now with the integrators as well.
Well, if the result's not as great, I don't know why they weren't being lined to buy it.
No, the result will be better. Well, so you're going to have a bound form of nitrogen, so you won't have that volatilization of the nitrogen off-gassing?
I actually have proved that before I would leave it.
Okay.
I'm from Missouri.
So we have a farmer that I'm actually a farmer's daughter too. So we will be doing some grow trials on farm.
Yeah.
But from what we've seen, this is I should say that we will not have any on-site storage of anything. That all. So your question about what gets trucked off.
Have you ever tried this material?
It's in that bag.
No, I'm saying have you ever tried it?
Have I tried it with plants?
Yeah. Did you spray it on the field? Find out it worked. Are you just assume it's going to work?
Well, we know what the nutrient profile is. So the nutrient profile is a very positive nutrient profile.
As good as you say it is, right?
That's because the lab said it.
Well, I can't say it's as good when you remove the phosphorus from it.
Well, again, if you have phosphorus-saturated soil, as a farmer, you're going to be able to utilize this just like you would chicken litter. You're going to get especially all the micronutrients, the boron, the iron, the calciums, out of this that you would not have in a synthetic fertilizer. And if you don't have phosphorus-limited soil, you can blend in more phosphorus.
So you're not going to sell it, you're not going to blend that phosphorus back in and sell it all the same time?
That phosphorus is spoken for right now. Yeah. Not to say that maybe we get to a point where we have a little extra, but I don't think it's going to leave the watershed.
It's spoken to go to out west, right?
Where they don't have any phosphorus.
All right, Sam, we've heard enough.
Dr. Shaw,
you're
killing me.
Dr. Shaw, Denrick has a large role in all of this process, correct?
Yes.
And what role does Denrick play as far as air quality is concerned?
Let me bring up my list of permits and approvals. So we will have to have an air quality permit with Denrac. Can I just go through the?
Sure.
All right. We'll also have to do solid waste permits. As you know, we'll have to do permits and approvals through DLDOT. We did realize or found out through the PLUS report that we may have access to public water through the Artesian Water Company. So either we'll have public water or on-site wells. One will be the PSC has jurisdiction over the public water, or we'll go through Denrec for on-site wells. We'll have a sediment and stormwater plan, which will go through Sussex Conservation, and we'll have to meet all of Delaware State Fire Marshal Code. There will also be, we'll go through the nutrient load assessment protocol with Denrec's watershed assessment section, and that will give us guidelines on best management practices for our TMDLs and adhering with the inland bays pollution control strategies.
And on air quality, is there anything coming out of any smokestacks or what kind of stuff comes out into the air that you're concerned that there's going to be a need for this air quality permit?
So because they're generators, they will have an emissions profile.
Emissions from the generator.
Right. And it's below Title V thresholds. So Title V thresholds from EPA say that in our jurisdiction, we have to have 100 tons per year or less of the emissions that are problematic. We're nowhere close on any of our emissions, but we still have to have, just because we have the potential to emit, which is what air quality permit calls anything that will make any sort of air emission, we will have a permit. We will have...
So that's the only air quality issue is with those generators. None of those other tanks and all that other stuff?
No.
Nothing comes out of any of that.
Nothing comes out of it.
Just the generators.
So again, the air quality on those generators, is it? You mentioned it's all self-contained. So this product is being used to for the energy to for those generators? Or is it, what fuel are you using for these generators?
So the methane fuels the generators.
Oh, yeah. Right, which is what's being generated from this process.
Right.
Is that correct?
And then the generators put electricity onto the grid.
Okay. So... if you were to exceed what the permit allows, what negative effect would it have on the surrounding community?
I don't think that we even have the potential to.
Assume for a hypothetical that they exceeded some air quality permit, then that would be enforced by the Department of Natural Resources Air Quality Control. People, I mean, the worst possible scenario is to shut the plant down.
They would make you come into compliance.
Absolutely.
They would make you come into compliance, correct.
What safety valve, and if something were to go wrong, is there something there that's monitoring the quality of the air, and if indeed something were to be above a certain threshold, does the system shut down automatically? What safety measures are in place for the community and the residents?
So DENREC will have air quality monitors on each of the generators. They'll come out, and I wish I could pull off the top of my head how often they come out, but before you ever even begin the production, you have to start to meet those thresholds before the process really can begin, and then they'll be out regularly making sure that our generators are meeting the marks that they're supposed to meet with our permit. If we don't meet those marks, which we don't even have with 6 megawatts worth of generators, with the generators that we're using, we don't have the potential to emit in that Title V area. But if we did, or if we were over where the permit said that we needed to be, they have every authority to shut us down.
Well, I guess, but it's based on them showing up to do their job, right? So my concern is that, what if they don't? My concern is there anything in the system that automatically were to shut it down, or we have to rely and depend on DENREC or the other authority to do their job? That's the question.
Andy?
Whomever would like to answer that question.
So I think it's just important to understand that if we are fully monitoring our own system and how our generators are running, we have experts who that's all that they do. So if there is a moment where they're not running efficiently the way they're supposed to, we'll know immediately, and we will shut it down.
So that's one of the 17 employees that's on site?
One of them would be doing that job, correct.
Okay.
And so there's no problem shutting it down and making sure we get to the bottom of whatever is going on whenever that happens. And the rest of the facility continue to operate during that time, even though it's not providing gas to the actual generators.
So there is somebody from one of the employees, one of the 15 to 17 employees that will be there, that is their job, is to continuously 24/7 monitor this
well,
process.
So between that and our automated systems that run those as well. So yes, we will know before anybody else knows if there's a problem with one of those generators.
Okay. That's what I want to hear.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you, Andy.
Dennis?
Yes,
we're just looking at the land use. We're not going to really be involved, right, in the construction and all this we're hearing. What agencies will monitor the, we've heard about how this is going to be this and this is all going to hook into tile together. Who makes sure what we just heard today, what agency follows through with it? Because we don't.
We're talking about the principal issues of air quality and water quality.
Okay.
Those would both be monitored through Department of Natural Resources.
But the design could change, right? Right?
No,
if the design of this plant, or they moved a tank here or whatever.
We've got to go through a site plan process.
Right.
Obviously, there's a lot of more engineering than what you typically see in a conditional use application here. I'm not sure the technical skills of staff on the third floor as to whether or not they're familiar with any or all of this, but I'm sure they will take a peek at it before it comes back.
Right, but again, we don't have the expertise to know.
Expertise,
we're just looking at the land use.
But as you, we're in a point in the process, assuming for a moment that this application is approved, mm-hmm. and we want to come back and get final site plan approval in order to get construction permits. We can't show up and ask for that unless we have permits from all the regulatory mm-hmm. agencies that have jurisdiction over commenting about any or all the processes that would go place. That would include air quality, water okay. quality, soil conservation district would have to something to say about stormwater management. DLDOT gets to talk about traffic. As I often tell people, there are 26 regulatory agencies in PLUS, and they represent all of the 26 agencies okay. that have the right and privilege to comment on the use of land in the state of Delaware, and that includes, you know, okay. fish and wildlife.
We'll go back to the similar to the other application. I know that the people who live on, as I think Brazier, have the impact of all the trucks going back to the borrow pit, right? And it has been a major impact on those people for years. Is there any thoughts of that, or is there, did you make any mention to maybe coming off of 113 like you did across the street?
We're in a corridor preservation area.
No. Oh.
And we can't do that.
But this side of the road is and the other side isn't?
No, both sides are.
Both sides are. I actually went back and looked through the service level evaluation on the other side, and DelDOT was under the assumption that we had access off of Pebblestone or Betts. So when they made their call on the service level, they thought that mm-hmm. we had access there. So that's going to be... They have jurisdiction to that to the setback. So whether or not we're able to figure out something as the setback butts up to the corner of that parcel, that might be an option. That's something that we're going to have to explore with DelDOT. Mm-hmm. DelDOT was very clear in our plus in our service level evaluation on this side of the highway, though, that. There would be no entrance allowed off of 113, and that we needed to use Brazier Road for that.
Couldn't you use the old farmhouse entrance? The old house?
If it happened to fall down, that would...
Make it a toll booth?
I don't know. I mean, I just know the...
Let me offer you this, Mr. Cole, because I made the same representation to the Planning Commission, mm-hmm. and the same comment would apply as it did to the solar farm. We understand what the concern is in terms of the people on Brazier and Bunting Road in terms of 12 additional tractor trailers going on their road. This is in the corridor, I'm sure I have it right. It's in the department's corridor capacity preservation program. We have no ability to tell DelDOT any more than you all do whether or not we can come or go off 113. If there is a way we can get off 113 without using Brazier and Bunting, we would certainly look into that and make every effort to do so. But it's another regulatory agency with its own powers and enforcement abilities.
So I did want to bring up, I know that the Brazier Road access was a concern, and I understand it from coming down Brazier off of, you're going to have to help me with the crossroad that comes off of from the stoplight, and then there's a crossroad, and then Brazier.
Kruger.
It's our intention to use this section of Brazier, mm-hmm. not the other parts of Brazier. Now, I say that with the drawback that we don't have control of the trucks. The trucks are controlled by our litter brokers. And that's not part of our scope of their contract. But it makes sense to me that if our entrances are right here off of Brazier, that they shouldn't be moving up and down the more residential part of the road. They should be going up and down the same area that the borrow pit trucks are.
Well, can't you not change your contract to ensure that that's what they do?
Potentially.
We can put it in a contract, but we would have... 12 potential.
Well, let me ask you kind of a summer question for me anyways, and we still have a full room of people I'm sure that many want to hear and that want to share their thoughts. So we have a self-enclosed facility, as you've mentioned, right?
Yes.
So very little to no smell. Is that correct?
Yes.
12 truckloads a day, which doesn't seem huge, I mean, in our area along that highway, but so little to no traffic, quote unquote. I looked forward to hearing from the residents. No environmental concerns, based on what you said.
Right.
So why are they here? Why is this room full of people? In a short summary, explain to me what we're about to hear, and why is this an issue?
I think that there's, I could probably name on a hand, people are concerned about that it is going to be incineration. People are concerned about whether or not we're going to harm groundwater. And I will point out that one of the conditions, and I think it's a good condition, actually we liked all the conditions, was that we take preliminary groundwater samples. That's not a problem. This is not a, we have no discharge. One of the other concerns is that this is not that this is an area that, that they don't expect to have the odors of chicken houses or chicken litter. And if I could respond to that, so I pulled up a map, just a Google map, and went around and circled all of the chicken houses that are in the vicinity, because all of us have a concern whether or not this fits with the area. In a 2-mile radius, there are 11 independent farms that all have chicken houses. Here we are in the center. The closest chicken houses from us are 0.67 miles. In a 3-mile radius, there are 17 separate chicken farm facilities. So I would submit that we are within the landscape of the area. I also wanted to address odors. So this is going to get a little technical, and I've been asked to not get too sciencey. I found this paper and got all excited about it. So odor modeling. There have been some really great studies that have primarily come out of the Midwest. This was a study that was done out in Minnesota, and they were looking at agricultural production sites and modeling the amount of odor that you would expect from anywhere from a feedlot to a chicken house to what have you, and how far those sorts of facilities need to be offset from residences. So using that model, I took the area and I put our center here is where we have our litter delivery. I'll remind you, actually I don't think we talked about it yet, each truck takes 15 minutes to offload. So with 12 trucks, that's approximately 3 hours total per day. So in that 3 hours total per day, at a distance of 100 meters, and let me give you that in feet. I had it somewhere. We're just going to have to go with that. But I really do want to give it to you in feet. Yeah, hold on. Oh, I know where it is. Hold on.
Dennis, while she's looking, is there another, does this company have another facility somewhere else, another location just like this?
Not at this time that I'm in.
So we are building in Westover. We have a plant that has been approved in Westover, and we have broken ground there, and we should actually, once we get through, this weather doesn't say much about it, but once we move through the wetter the wet months, we are about to start construction back up, but the land has been prepared there. Here we go. 328 feet is the first circle. 656 is the second circle. 984 is the third circle. 1,312 feet is the fourth circle. And then we go up to about 1,600 feet is the fifth circle. At the fifth circle, you would expect that only 2% of the time residents may experience odor during litter delivery. So 3 hours a day. If you're in this far outside radius, you're going to have the propensity to smell something 2% of the time. Here, right next, in this first outer circle, 9% of the time. So 9% of 30 minutes a day. And I should say that the authors of this article actually had stipulations for planning of how far you would offset depending upon how dense your residence. We fell into that 96 percentile. So at this point here, you would expect that 4% of that time you would have an odor offset where someone would actually smell something appreciable. And these were all conservative estimates.
And that's based upon, just to be sure that we're clear about this, there are still buffers to be maintained, berms, and of course prevailing winds,
right,
and weather conditions. Correct.
Do we know how that compares to chicken houses?
Chicken houses were part of the study that they used in determining these models.
Okay,
Mr. Arlen, you also asked. You asked the question of what are some of the things we were about to hear about. The one thing that Dr. Shaw didn't mention is traffic. We are going to hear about traffic, and I'll make the point at this right now at this juncture. Traffic along Brazier and Bunting Roads is something that's regulated by the Department of Transportation. And I believe a large part of the problem that the nice folks behind me are going to address has a lot to do with the borrow pit and the activities that are taking place by others, not this particular proposed operation. One of the proposed cures could be, if DelDOT chose to do so, would be to limit truck traffic, much as they do on Route 9 from Park Boulevard, I believe is what it's called, from Park Boulevard to where the new proposed recreational facility is. Not allowed to have four axle vehicles, I think is the limitation. Much in the same fashion as you couldn't have them in town. That's something DelDOT could do to mitigate that issue.
Because if I recall through the planning zoning process, that I believe it was a concern from some that this road is not wide enough or is not capable of handling these trucks. So I would like for you to address that. I know that would be a DelDOT issue, but
right.
But nonetheless.
Well, the portion
And before you answer that, before I forget, is this privately owned, this road, or is it public?
It's
DelDOT.
It's a DelDOT road.
Yes, I want to make sure.
And I believe the site plan that we submitted and the detail does show that there is some reservation of rights of way on our side of the road that would be dedicated to DelDOT.
Okay, so I'll let you answer the question about is this road. But I guess ultimately that would be a DelDOT decision.
It'll be a DelDOT decision.
But it is a concern.
My only response to that would be that tractor trailers, far more than the number that we have, use it daily to go back to the borrow pit.
Ms. Cornwell, did you want to add to that?
I just want to note in the DelDOT service level evaluation, it states that while the traffic however, we are concerned that truck traffic to and from the proposed facility could damage the roads in the vicinity of the project. While the traffic information provided is sufficient for us at this time, we anticipate requiring the applicant to make roadway improvements, which would be identified during the site plan review. So it sounds like DelDOT is going to make them do some type of work to the roads.
Chairman, we've got a couple questions, although my compadres have done asked many of them. You got one going in Dover, right?
West Over, Maryland.
Okay, so there's none in Delaware.
Correct.
Is this something that's done anywhere else other than these two? That site and this one? I mean, is this a national thing that's done?
So I should back up and explain how these technologies got paired together. So we have a technology provider called Eagle Green Energy that's out of Mississippi, and they currently have 8 of these poultry-only anaerobic digesters that they have anywhere from Mississippi, Arkansas, Kentucky. They've really perfected, believe it or not, each digester is different depending upon the feedstock you're putting into it. So a dairy digester is going to be different from a poultry digester. So they've really perfected the poultry digester piece of this, and that's who we have contracted with to be our anaerobic digester provider. Then when we take it over to the nutrient recovery piece, again, that's Ostera. Those two pieces haven't been put together before. The reason they haven't been put together before was no one could really figure out how do you take that digestate and get it to a place where you can pull the phosphorus out. We have our chief technical officer has a PhD in chemistry, and he figured it out. So that's where we make that leap, which is a really important leap to make, because just making the electricity, if you're doing it on a scale that isn't just farm level, you can't do it and actually make money off of it. You have to have that second piece of the nutrient recovery, which again, I would assert incineration would never make financial sense because we wouldn't have that second piece of the nutrient recovery. We would basically just be paying someone to burn something. It wouldn't make any sense for us.
So is the answer that you haven't done this with actual chicken litter anywhere?
No, the answer is our contractor who is going to be building the anaerobic digester piece of this has done it in 9 different places.
With chickens, okay.
Yes.
You said Kentucky, is that correct?
Kentucky, yes.
And it's cooked at 130 degrees in the first tank. So it just burns in there by itself? It doesn't?
It's not burning.
Where does it go?
It's not burning.
Okay.
It's heating. It's heating. Yeah. It's the bacteria need to be at about that temperature for their metabolisms to really kick in and start to convert. And it's kind of like, you know, I guess it is, it's akin to making soup. You're not going to make soup at a low temperature. You've got to get it cooking in order for everything to meld in the way it needs to.
Okay. And then I just have one thing with the chicken trucks, right? That's a beautiful truck. It's covered up. It's great. I grew up next to right next to a chicken plant in Milford. No truck came in with those covers on it. No truck. So it's got to be part of the contract, because you can't find a chicken truck on this road that's covered, and it's a law that they have to be covered. I've never seen one covered. That's a nice looking covered truck.
So it's my understanding. I was reading through the conditional uses that were associated with the AgriCycle facility, and I believe that was one of their conditions, is that all the trucks that came onto their property had to be covered, and that they've never had a problem with that. So
I believe Mr. Bird's referring to live poultry.
Live poultry.
Yeah.
Right.
And we're talking about chicken, which are two.
Well, I'm talking about covered trucks and the law.
Right. They don't have a live poultry. Don't have them covered. They would smother them if you're covering.
Oh, okay.
Even in winter time, you just want to put sides down on so to keep them warm. So they won't be freezing.
That's all the questions I have.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Burton. Mr. Moore, Mr. President, I believe that concludes our presentation. Typically, I would invite you to ask us questions, but I think we've already been through that part of the process already. So I simply have a couple notes that I'd like to bring, or you know, reinforce some impressions. Again, this is not an incinerator. This is an innovative recycling process. It benefits the agricultural business, and it benefits the electrical generation process. It incorporates the environmental protections that you want for this type of facility. We have submitted to you proposed findings of fact and conditions. There are conditions, again, a great many, that were proposed by the Planning and Zoning Commission. Those conditions have been thoughtfully considered by us, and we are in agreement that we can provide those or comply with the conditions and maybe some additional ones if you choose to do so. The last thing I'd like to point out is that we have had a unanimous vote at the Planning and Zoning Commission, including Mrs. Stevenson. And I know that Mrs. Stevenson made the motion to reject this particular application when it was out on Route 9. But having seen and heard what was presented in connection with this particular application, she has decided to be in favor of it. You're familiar with the standard of review. You're familiar with the conditions that can be set out under the conditional use ordinance. There may be some people here who wish to speak in favor of the application, and I'm sure there are others who would like to express their concerns. So we'll stand down until you call us back to the podium.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone else here today that would like to speak in favor?